Blog Talk Radio. You're listening to The Conservative Cauldron, Bewitching Radio.
I want to be known as the guy who was awakened from a sleepwalking liberalism by a man by the name of Clarence Thomas, who stood there in a dignified manner as they tried to destroy him, yet he wasn't destroyed. And I want the Democratic Party and liberalism, I want my professors at Tulane and in the humanities departments to know that they tried to brainwash me to side with liberal Democrats in order to attack those that disagreed. And I want my legacy to be that they know that they screwed with the wrong guy. In the United States of America, you have the right to think freely. You have the right to be whatever you want in this United States. And the idea that the Democrat media complex would tell you that you are a slave to an ideology, to a mindset, that if you don't abide by it, we're going to punish you severely. That's as un-American as anything that I can possibly imagine. I don't care if you would agree with me or disagree with me on policy. What I care about is that you have the freedom in this country to live your life as a free, rugged individualist. And I am at war with anybody that would tell you that you don't have a right to be a free man.
Andrew Breitbart, thank you, man,
thank
for
you.
Being here with me today.
Thank you.
Good Saturday evening, everyone. Better late than never. You're listening, finally, to Conservative Cauldron Radio. I'm your host, Becky Noble. We had a few glitches last night. We had a few, wrenches in the works last night, but we've got it all worked out, and here we are on what is going to be probably a pretty nasty weekend weather-wise. Pick one, you name it, and we've got it here in St. Louis. We've got rain, we've got snow, we've got sleet, we've got freezing rain. It's a veritable cornucopia of weather here in St. Louis, let me tell you. So if you're looking for variety, well, you know, this is the place to be. So that, of course, was Andrew Breitbart. And, I can't even believe that it's been 2 years already since we lost Andrew. It's been 2 years ago today. And it seems like a lifetime ago. And, I met Andrew once. I met him at the Smart Girls Summit when it was here in St. Louis in 2011. And he has a presence for even only having met him for a brief time. When he walks into a room, you know it. He had a presence like nobody else. And when I asked him for some advice for a young fledgling little baby blogger like myself at the time, I asked him for some advice. What advice would he give me? And he looked me in the eye. First of all, he thought it was really cool that I was a witch. He kept saying over and over again, that is so cool. That is the coolest thing. So that was cool for me on a personal note. But when I asked him what kind of advice he would have for someone, like, he looked me in the face, and he said, get in their face. And so tonight, Andrew, that's what I'm doing. And not just me, but people like me all over the nation, we're getting in their face. And they don't like it, but that's too bad because we're getting in their face. And so I'd like to dedicate tonight's show to Andrew Breitbart, to his memory and to his legacy, because this was Andrew's vision. This of regular, normal, everyday people finding the truth and getting the truth out so that other people will know, that was his vision. And he knew that it had to be done because the regular dinosaur mainstream media, not only were they not going to do it, they have no interest in doing it because it does not promote their agenda. It does not help to promote other people like Barack Obama to run for office and to stay in office and to try to maintain their grasp on power. It doesn't fit with that template for them. Therefore, they will try to shut you down and try to shut you up. So tonight, Andrew, this one's for you, buddy. Your memory lives on, and we're trying to carry on the fight for you. So with that thought in mind, you know, the biggest thing I think going on right now this week, and it's going to go on for a long time to come in the weeks and months ahead, is the situation in Ukraine right now. And the latest on that is right now that as of today, as of Saturday, 1,000 Russian troops are now occupying the Crimean Peninsula. For those of you who are not great on geography or not as good as you once were, such as myself, that is a peninsula where the Ukraine is. Oh, you know, it's Saturday night, and we're just going to chill out and listen to the rain on the roof and prepare to be snowed in and you know, talk about stuff because that's what Andrew would have wanted. But right now, the Ukrainian people, the Ukrainian leaders are really kind of considering this an occupation, that they are considering it an invasion by Russia of their sovereignty. And this, I believe, was yesterday. President Obama had a bit of a message for Russian President Vladimir Putin, and I'm sure that Vlad is shaking in his boots, but let's listen a little bit to the president.
President Barack Obama.
Good afternoon, everybody. Over the last several days, the United States has been responding to events as they unfold in Ukraine. Now, throughout this crisis, we have been very clear about one fundamental principle. The Ukrainian people deserve the opportunity to determine their own future. Together with our European allies, we have urged an end to the violence and encouraged Ukrainians to pursue a course in which they stabilize their country, forge a broad-based government, and move to elections this spring. I also spoke several days ago with President Putin, and my administration has been in daily communication with Russian officials, and we've made clear that they can be part of an international community's effort to support the stability and success of a united Ukraine going forward, which is not only in the interest of the people of Ukraine and the international community, but also in Russia's interests. However, we are now deeply concerned by reports of military movements taken by the Russian Federation inside of Ukraine. Russia has a historic relationship with Ukraine, including cultural and economic ties, and a military facility in Crimea. But any violation of Ukraine's sovereignty and territorial integrity would be deeply destabilizing, which is not in the interest of Ukraine, Russia, or Europe. It would represent a profound interference in matters that must be determined by the Ukrainian people. It would be a clear violation of Russia's commitment to respect the independence and sovereignty and borders of Ukraine and of international laws. And just days after the world came to Russia for the Olympic Games, it would invite the condemnation of nations around the world. And indeed, the United States will stand with the international community in affirming that there will be costs for any military intervention in Ukraine. Now, the events of the past several months remind us of how difficult democracy can be in a country with deep divisions. But the Ukrainian people have also reminded us that human beings have a universal right to determine their own future. Right now, the situation remains very fluid. Vice President Biden just spoke with the Prime Minister of Ukraine to assure him that in this difficult moment, the United States supports his government's efforts and stands for the sovereignty, territorial integrity, and democratic future of Ukraine. I also commend the Ukrainian government's restraint and its commitment to uphold its international obligations. We will continue to coordinate closely with our European allies. We will continue to communicate directly with the Russian government, and we will continue to keep all of you in the press corps and the American people informed as events develop. Thanks very much.
Mr. President, do you know who those forces are in Crimea? Are they Russian forces?
A brief statement from President Obama.
Okay, first of all, the first thing I want to ask, and I'm sure that I'm not the only one, what the hell did he just say? What did he say? It was 3 minutes, 3 minutes and 6 seconds to be exact, of Ukrainian people showing restraint, and they've had a long and colored history with Russia. And where in there is there any sort of there's no there. It came today too that Obama has. He was on the phone for 90 minutes with Vlad the Impaler, and if you hear the news media tell it that he was on the phone telling Putin, you know, this is how it's going to be, and if you don't like it, tough schmoles. And you know, I'm sure that nothing could be further from the truth. I'm sure that if anything, it was probably the other way around, that Putin was probably giving Obama what for. But you know, I think in a bigger picture too. Let's look at not just what's going on in Ukraine right now, and it's a very dangerous situation. It's a very fluid one. Like I will give the president that one. It's a fluid situation, and it's going to keep changing day to day. But if you take a look at what's going on right now there in Ukraine, look at the violence going on in Venezuela right now, the situation in Iran, North Korea, the list goes on and on and on. There's a reason that it's all going on at once. Does anyone believe that the fact that all of these things are going on at once, does anybody believe that that's coincidence? Because I certainly do not. President Obama, he showed the world 6 years ago when he first took office, he showed the world what kind of leader he was going to be. And when he did that, as he showed the world what kind of leader he was going to be, he was bowing to Saudi kings. And you don't need anything else in the world at all but pictures of Barack Obama bowing to Saudi kings and princes to know what kind of leader he was going to be. And then there was the whole lead from behind thing. Again, what the hell is that? What does that mean? Lead from behind? Lead behind is an oxymoron. Lead from behind means you're not leading at all. And I think that pretty soon it's the United States, we're going to look like toddlers, and we're going to look like little kids who jump up and down and yell and scream and raise their hand, ooh, look at me, trying to get the world's attention, and nobody's going to care anymore because no one is going to look at us as a superpower. If they don't not look at us already as a superpower, they're going to look at us and go, oh, all right, whatever. And just go on about whatever business it is that they hope to accomplish and whatever evil they want to foist upon the rest of the world. And there's not going to be a thing that we're going to be able to do about it. And there is any coincidence that all of these events are taking place right now simultaneously. It's bad news, kids. And this situation here is only going to get it's going to get worse in the days and weeks to come. Let's see. The words of President Obama to Vladimir Putin were that there's going to be costs. Well, the only cost that I have heard talked about in the recent days was that we would possibly boycott the G8 summit in Sochi this summer in June of this year, the economic summit. And, again, I'm sure that Vladimir Putin is shaking in his boots over that. I do know that we have recalled the ambassador from Russia back to the United States. I believe the Canadians have called back their ambassador as well. But, you know, that's a lot of little things that really don't they don't make a big impact. So we will be watching this very, very closely in the days and weeks to come. And, again, there's another coincidence here that's going on with all of these various volatile situations in the world, and that is that also this week that there were some spending cuts announced for our military this week. And that is also to go along with when you have situations like this going on in the world, and then you announce to the world that you're going to implement these drastic spending cuts. Well, it's a recipe for disaster. And basically, what's going to go on here is that the U.S. military is going to be cut to pre-World War II levels, and that's a lot of cutting, kids. And also, when you say the military is going to be cut to pre-World War II levels, that means that it's also going to be cut to pre-9/11 levels. And the CBO report came out this week, the Congressional Budget Office, on this, and there is, well, there's kind of a, well, it's a questionable reason as to why these cuts are taking place. And what it says here is that the CBO report finds that military spending, which includes Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid, is set to rise $85 billion or 4% to $2.1 trillion this year. The interest on the national debt, of course, is worse. It's projected to increase 14% per year, almost quadrupling in dollar terms between 2014 and 2024. And what is going on here, at least what is suspected of going on here, is that in the Constitution, there are very specific things that are mandated that excuse me, I have to do a Marco Rubio here. Excuse me very much. Give me one second here, kids. All righty then. Now then, where were we? I know where we were. There are very specific things in the Constitution that are mandated that the federal government pay for. And one of the first and foremost of those things is the military. The Constitution requires that the U.S. government pay for the military. What the U.S. Constitution does not provide for is entitlements. And what's going on here is there are more and more entitlements being given to more and more people who are feeling entitled. And that money that we would be using on the military, which should be being used on the military, to give these men and women who are fighting for our freedoms and fighting for our liberties what they need to do their job, is being given to other people who don't want to do a job. And not only wouldn't want to do a military job, but really wouldn't want to do any kind of job in general. But here is a little snippet, a little tidbit on these cuts this week. I think.
The entire fleet of Cold War A-10 attack jets like these are among the casualties of budget cuts proposed by Defense Secretary Hagel. The Pentagon is required to cut its budget to $496 billion annually, down from a wartime high of nearly $700 billion. With the Iraq and Afghanistan wars ending, Hagel told reporters it is time for reality at the Department of Defense.
We must now adapt, innovate, and make difficult decisions to ensure that our military remains ready and capable. maintaining its technological edge over all potential adversaries.
The most visible cut is the reduction of troops from the current 520,000 to as few as 440,000, the lowest since 1940. The Obama administration's aim is to make the force more agile and efficient, and that means more emphasis on drones and special forces, as well as boosting cyber defenses to deal with a new set of challenges. But defense analyst Michael O'Hanlon sees only a slight shift in approach.
Yes, there's a little greater emphasis on everything from drones to cyber to special forces to Air Force and Navy technology, but these shifts cannot be radical for a country with the broad security responsibilities of the United States. And as long as the North Korean threat is in place, as long as troops are in Afghanistan, as long as other potential worries loom on the horizon, I don't think we can push this logic too far.
For now, there are no calls for reducing the fleet of 11 U.S. aircraft carriers, something Washington cannot afford to do as China continues to build up its forces in the Pacific, where it is operating its first aircraft carrier. Still, Hagel says America's way of fighting wars will not be the same.
This is a different time. This is the first time in 13 years we will be presenting a budget to the Congress of the United States that's not a war footing budget.
Hagel's next battle is in Congress, which would have to approve the cuts in order for them to go into effect. Luis Ramirez, VOA News, at the Pentagon.
So what is also going on here, what is also being announced to the world, is that the United States will not be militarily ready to fight a war on two fronts. Hypothetical question here, but what happens if that should indeed case, if that should be necessary at some point? And Congressman Chris Van Hollen of Maryland addressed that fact, and he said that drawing down this military spending at this time is just, it's a logical time right now to save defense money. And his quote is that we do not need for the defense of our country to be able to have a defense doctrine that calls for fighting two land wars at the same time. Well, but we just got done fighting two land wars at the same time because it was necessary. And, you know, the fact that these people have no qualms about announcing to the world that, yeah, well, we're just not going to be ready to fight a war on two different fronts at simultaneously anymore because, well, we just can't afford it. And it's just, you know, this kind of thing, this kind of drawing down of military spending has it's come back to bite people in the butt before. And it's come back to bite people like Britain in the butt before. It says here that this is an article here from Fox News, and talking about what happened in Britain during World War II and the run-up to World War II, that after World War I, the British people were just tired of war, they were tired of being at war, they were tired of funding war, and they knew as early as 1934 in Germany that something was happening, something was brewing, and that they knew that this was going to be a possibility. And Winston Churchill warned of Britain being pacifist and not being able to defend itself. And he said in a speech in 1936 to a British Parliament who, again, at the time, was very disinterested in war. They were still – World War I was still fresh on the brain for them. And his quote was, "A lack of clear thinking, confusion of counsel until the emergency comes, until self-preservation strikes its jarring gong, these are the features which constitute the endless repetition of history." And to translate that a little bit better here, Chairman of the House Armed Services Committee, Buck McKeon from California, put it a little more in today's words. And what he said was that the price is going to be paid for this, whether it's in the Middle East, whether it's in the Pacific, whether it's in Europe. I don't know where, I don't know when, I don't know how, but some bad actor has come along and challenged us. And, you know, right now we have a whole world full of bad actors. And we have you know, Vladimir Putin is not our friend. Kim Jong-un is definitely not our friend. Nicolas Maduro in Venezuela is definitely not our friend. And if this is, I just don't know that I would be announcing it to the world. I mean, you can't be on a war footing forever. I get that. But when you announce to the world that you're going to implement these spending cuts, and you do it at a time such as this when quite frankly, Russia and Ukraine could very well be on the verge of civil war. We don't know yet because it's still very early and very fluid in this situation. But it's probably not a good time to be doing this. If you're going to do it, it's never a good time to be doing it. It's probably an even worse time to be announcing it. But while we are on the subject of military cuts and military spending and volatile situations around the world, this is something that I don't think that I heard a whole lot of places this week. And there's pictures of it here. This is from The Blaze. And if you go to The Blaze, you can probably still find the pictures here. And in case anybody didn't hear about it, in case anybody was not in the know this week, there were Russian warships docked in Cuba. And there was no explanation from Cuba or from the Russian government as to why this was taking place. This was reported, like I said, from The Blaze on Wednesday. And Cuban state media did not say anything, of course, about it. The ship Viktor Leonov CCB-175 boat, measuring about 300 feet long and 47 feet wide, so it's not a canoe, kids. It's a good size vessel, and it says that the ship was docked at the Port of Havana's cruise ship area near the Russian Orthodox Cathedral, for whatever that is worth. But basically, what this ship is used for is for gathering intelligence, and there were a lot of ships built like this back in the 1980s for the Soviets. And the Russian fleet still uses them. And it says this is a ship that is referred to as a Meridian-class intelligence ship, packed with electronic eavesdropping equipment and weaponry, including AK-630 rapid-fire cannons and surface-to-air missiles. It boasts a crew of around 200 people, and it has been in service since 1988. So it is definitely not a new ship. But the fact of the matter is that the damn boat is there in Cuba, roughly 100 miles away from the United States. And the boat is there complete with intelligence gathering devices and all sorts of other paraphernalia and goodies that maybe we don't want 100 miles off the American coast. The Defense Department was asked if they knew what the deal was with the Russian intelligence ship being parked in Havana, and they released a statement that said, "We are aware that a Russian naval vessel has docked in Havana. We recognize the rights of all sovereign nations to freely navigate in international waters, and to port in the countries they have agreements with." And when the Department of Defense was asked when asked when the DOT knew the ship that was in close range of the United States, an official from the Department of Defense told The Blaze, quote, "For operational security reasons, we will not discuss the specifics." I'm having a problem tonight, aren't I? "Relating to our maritime domain awareness activities," which is Department of Defense's for even if we know, we're not going to tell you. And if we have to tell you, we have to kill you. So there's that. So while you are all enjoying your Saturday evening plans, there are Russians roughly 90 to 100 miles off the coast of the United States with their ears to the wind, and they want to know everything that you're doing. But anyway, we're going to take a little break here. I'm going to get some more water here and try not to have a frog in my throat. And if the frog is still there, I will do my best to get rid of him so I do not sound like that I am dying on air and scaring all of my faithful listeners. So with that, I'm going to take a break. I will be right back. You are listening to Conservative Cauldron Radio. I'm Becky Noble. I am really glad. I'm really pumped that you guys are here on a Saturday night on a rainy, nasty, icy, snowy. Pick a word to describe. A nasty night in St. Louis here to listen to me on Conservative Cauldron Radio. So I'm going to take a break. We're going to be right back. You're listening to Conservative Cauldron Radio. It's Saturday night, kids. Be right back.
Yeah, that's where the grown is sexy. Y'all know who y'all is. Come on. A little frustrated.
Hell of a week at work, and boss keeps yelling at me. What a jerk, and home is killing me too. It's the worst call. Kids done got out of school. On my nerves, and sometimes my grind on, but I need a good groove. I wanna lose control. Step in, I'm getting crunk too. Yeah, my world's day. More than a little will do, but I wanna get dirty. Countdown.
Cauldron Radio. I'm Becky Noble. Thanks for hanging out and chilling out with me on a rainy, nasty, snowy, we went through all those words, night here in St. Louis where the weather's just, the weather's going to suck. And so what else would you rather be doing but sitting here hanging out with me? We're talking about all the things that are going on in Ukraine and Russia right now and how scared out of his mind that Vladimir Putin is of Barack Obama not. And we got a whole lot of other things here that that are going on. I'm sure that everybody heard this week, I quote Rush so often here because, let's face it, Rush is the guy. Rush is the guy that started it all. And I do love it when Rush calls Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid. I do love it when he calls Harry Dingy Harry because, Harry is so dingy. But Stingy Harry put his foot in his mouth again this week. I don't know if it's again or still. You know, it just, it could be, I think that Harry does have chronic foot and mouth disease. It seems to be a disease that runs rampant through the Democratic Party. And basically what Dingy Harry said is that, well, you know all those stories that you've heard about 6 million people losing their insurance plans because of Obamacare, people who are cancer victims and they can't get any insurance right now, and if they do, that the out-of-pocket costs for them and the deductible costs are through the roof, and they're nothing like they were before. People were happy, and well, people really weren't happy. They were just too dumb to know that they weren't happy, even though they said they were. Well, all of those stories that you have heard, well, they're just not true.
We're able to buy a health insurance they could afford and they could trust. But despite all that good news, there's plenty of horror stories being told. All of them are untrue, but they're being told all over America. The leukemia patient whose insurance policy was canceled would die without her medication. Mr. President, that's an ad being paid for by two billionaire brothers. It's absolutely false. Or the woman whose insurance policy went up $700 a month. Ads paid for around America by the multi-billionaire Koch brothers, and the ad is false. We heard about the evils of Obamacare, about the lives it's ruining, and Republican stump speeches and ads paid for by oil magnates, the Koch brothers. But in those tales, turned out to be just that, tales. Stories made up from whole cloth, lies distorted by the Republicans to grab headlines or make political advertisements. Mr. President, these two brothers are trying to buy America. They not only funnel money through their Americans for Prosperity, they funnel money into all kinds of organizations to do the same thing that they're doing. They're trying to buy America. I don't believe America's for sale.
So let's get that straight. All of these people who have lost their health insurance, they're lying. They're all lying. And a lot of them, for a lot of them too, not only are they cancer victims, well, they're cancer victims and they're liars. And there is the report on this is from Fox News here, and it says, tell that to Linda DeWright, who was with Fox News' Neil Cavuto. There must be 6 million of us then. I think we should just call ourselves the Liars Club. Tom Giallinella of Seattle says he got a letter last fall canceling his old policy and laying out details of his Obamacare option. My premiums would increase approximately 61%, he says. I went from $891 a month to $1,437 a month, and also my deductibles all doubled. Apparently, Mr. Giallinella is also lying. Jeff and Victoria Hydett of North Carolina had been in a high-risk pool, an expensive form of coverage for those with serious health problems, but found Obamacare even more expensive. So apparently these are all people who are in the We Hate Obamacare Liars Club. And Senate Leader Mitch McConnell had a quote on this, and his quote was to say that these people across America who are losing their insurance, whose jobs are being lost, are not making us up, and no amount of Harry Reid calling everybody a liar changes the facts. And that is true. Harry Reid can trash the Koch brothers and talk about how all these people are lying until the cows come home, but the facts are the facts. And, of course, we all know how Democrats feel about facts. They're kind of pesky little things, and they get in the way for them. And our own Roy Blunt here in Missouri was also quoted as saying, he said, who has given 11 speeches laying out horror stories from constituents here in Missouri. He said about Harry Reid's comments, he said, I guess you think the active imagination of Missourians is just running wild because they're contacting our office constantly telling us about higher premiums, higher deductibles, insurance they used to have that worked, and insurance that doesn't work, he said. Those who feel they have been misled or find themselves forced to pay more than before is hardly a rarity. And again, some 6.2 million have had their policies canceled since last fall, and many of those people have been pushed into much more expensive health plans. And also found in the Congressional Budget Office report about Obamacare that it says that it will force two of three small businesses to pay higher rates than they do now. And there's even a lot of Democrats who are on board with doing something about this and fixing this part of the law. But the thing with that is that a lot of these Democrats, especially some of the Senate Democrats, Mary Landrieu from Louisiana, Kay Hagan from North Carolina, they're up for re-election this year, and they're scared, and they're sweating. And so they want this fixed now because they've got reporters asking them, well, would you like President Obama to campaign for them? And they smile, and they kind of dodge the question because they know that they can't look that reporter in the eye and go, hell no, I don't want President Obama anywhere near my campaign. I'm having enough problems as it is. I don't need for him to come here and campaign with me. So Dingy Harry did have to walk this back a little this week, and he tried to retract some of these statements, but you know what? Once that genie's out of the bottle, it's out there. And once you're going to call people like that, people who have chronic health conditions and need insurance and need to have the coverage that they previously had and now they don't, but you're also going to call them liars, you're not going to get that genie back in the bottle. That's out there. And but I'm sure that we can look forward to many more colorful statements by Senate Majority Leader Dingy Harry because, well, he's so good at it. We also had this week, we had Arizona Bill 1062. And what this bill did, basically, I have a whole printout here. It's kind of translates it and kind of breaks it down into a way that you can understand. And what it says here is what does this bill do? And it essentially it says it does two things. It broadens the net definition of who can invoke a shield against being sued for denying service. It broadens that definition from just one person from John Q. Public to a business or something along those lines to where it's just more than one person. It says it would expand to any individual, association, partnership, corporation, church, religious assembly or institution or other business organization. And this bill is very short. It's only two pages long. And I did read the actual bill, and I read some of the Arizona Senate notes on the bill that make it a little bit easier to read and to understand because, let's face it, those state houses are full of lawyers, and we know lawyers like words. Lawyers like words almost as much as reporters and radio talk show hosts like words. In fact, I think they like words more, but the words they like are the ones that none of us can understand. And, this bill was billed as you know, an attempt to discriminate against homosexuals and discriminate against same-sex marriages and same-sex relationships so that if they wanted a Christian baker or a Christian photographer to bake them a cake or take pictures of their wedding, that they could instantly, you know, militant, and I get uncomfortable talking about this because I do have gay friends, and I don't in any way believe that their rights should be infringed. They should have the right to, they have the right of pursuit of happiness just like you and me and just like anybody else in this nation does. But I also believe in people's religious rights. And being someone who is from a minority religion, that hits home with me, I think, a hell of a lot more than maybe some people. And I think really what the question here is that where do people's rights go? The people who have a right to inquire about a service or a product that they would like to use or utilize, and where is the line for people who can say, you know what, I don't dislike you, I just cannot in good conscience help you with your wedding or anything of that sort because it goes against my religious beliefs. And, you know, I have a hard time talking about this because, like I said, I have gay friends and I want them to be just as happy as anyone else. But I also want people to have religious freedom. And I think with this bill, and there is a bill being introduced here in Missouri that is very similar to it, and I promise that I will do some research on that, and we will talk about it at a later date as we find out and learn more about it. But there was nothing in this bill that specifically says homosexuals, and I think people want to kind of want to put this on a slippery slope and say, well, what happens if a black couple or a Hispanic couple or a Jewish couple want a wedding cake? Can someone refuse to bake them a cake based on the fact that a couple is black, or based on the fact that they're Jewish or that they're Muslim? Or, you know, those are other areas that I would have to see where someone's religious beliefs would come into a situation like that. And again, this was vetoed by Arizona Governor Jan Brewer, and it will be interesting to see if this somehow gets reintroduced in some way, or what happens with this bill if it does come back up. Excuse me again tonight, kids. There seems to be a rampant frog in the throat epidemic here tonight. So anyway, let's see, what else do we have? I do have a little bit of housekeeping. I talked about this a couple of months ago. Do you remember the German couple that I talked about, the Romkes, I believe, I'm sure I'm butchering their name. They are from Germany. They are homeschoolers, and they were granted asylum here in the United States. They live in Tennessee, and they came here to escape what they say is religious persecution in Germany. And it is illegal in Germany to homeschool your children. You must send them to public German schools. And the reason that there is a law against homeschooling in Germany, it goes back to the Nazi era, basically. And they basically, what they want is that they do not want... It sounds kind of creepy and kind of scary, but they want one set curriculum being taught to every German child. And I don't think they really care whether or not a child's family would prefer that they are not taught that curriculum. So anyway, the Romkes fled Germany, and they came to the United States so that they could homeschool their children. They are Christians, and they would like to be able to homeschool their children. And they were granted asylum. And in 2008, I believe, and in 2010, asylum was taken away from them. And since then, this has been winding its way through the 2012. I'm sorry. It's a very complicated case. And I know I've talked about it here before, and I don't have the facts in front of me right now today. But basically what is going to happen here is that on Monday, the Supreme Court, yes, that Supreme Court, the Supreme Court is going to make their decision on whether or not to hear the Romkes case, on whether or not they are going to be allowed to stay here in the United States and live and homeschool their children and raise their children the way that they would like to. Because if they are, if asylum is denied them once again permanently and they are deported back to Germany, they face some very, very stiff fines. They face possible custody of their children taken away from them and possibly even some jail time. So we're talking about a very serious matter here if they do get sent back to Germany. And, you know, ever since I heard about this case, I've just thought, what they must think. They had to have thought at the time that they decided to come here and start a new life here in America, that this was the one place that they could do that, and that this was the one place where they could raise their children and nobody would say anything about it. And this is the place where they've caught the most heat for it. What they must think about what their perception of America must be right now today as opposed to before they came here. I just can't imagine thinking how wrong you were. But let's think lots of positive thoughts and lots of prayers and you know, whatever it takes. But let's do some positive thinking here for the Romkeys and so that the Supreme Court will hear their case and that they will have a much better chance to stay here in America and take full advantage of all the wonderful things that this nation has to offer, and which includes homeschooling your children. And kind of along those notes, there's kind of been a theme here tonight. Other than frogs in the throat, there has been a theme here tonight of slashing the military and the rest of the world laughing at us when we say, don't cross that line. Remember that, yeah, remember the line that Syria wasn't supposed to cross? Is this the same line that Syria wasn't supposed to cross now, that Vladimir Putin is not supposed to cross? I'm confused. Maybe somebody can help me out. But there's also a theme here on people raising their children the way that they would like to raise their children. And this is another story. I'm sure that everybody has heard about this. The last couple of weeks, it's really gotten a lot of attention. This is the case of 15-year-old Justina Pelletier in Massachusetts. And Justina was diagnosed about a year ago at Tufts University with mitochondrial disease. It's a muscular disease. And like I said, she was diagnosed by the doctors at Tufts University. And they sent her to Boston Children's Hospital. And the doctors there at Boston Children's Hospital decided that the doctors at Tufts University, well, they didn't know what the hell they were talking about. And not only that did Justina not have mitochondrial disease, but whatever she did have was all in her head. She was just imagining the whole thing. And at that case, at that point, the Department of Children and Families in Massachusetts was brought in by Boston Children's Hospital. And long story short, Justina's parents, Linda and Lou Pelletier, lost custody of their daughter about a year ago. They have been able to have one-hour-long visits with her once a week. And because of this ongoing battle between the state of Massachusetts and the Pelletiers, Justina is not getting the treatments that she needs. And her, you know, as you see pictures of her progress from last year into that are more recent, it's very obvious that her health is deteriorating. The same group that worked on the Terri Schiavo case a couple of years ago, if everyone remembers the case of the woman in Florida who her family did not want her declared brain dead, and her husband did, and there was a big fight about her feeding tubes being removed. Well, the same group that worked on that case is now working with the Pelletiers to get custody of Justina so that they can have her back with them and that they can treat her the way that they would like for her to be treated. Because basically what has happened here is that Boston Children's Hospital, well, it's almost like they kidnapped her. I mean, there's really there's no nice, pretty way to put this. They decided that the doctors at Tufts University didn't know what they were talking about and that somehow Justina's parents were abusing her because they were only doing what the doctors at Tufts University advised them to do. And when you read this story, when you read the facts of this case and you hear about this story and you hear, actually this week, I believe it was the Massachusetts Department of Children and Families who did put out a statement, and it was very, you know, it was very broad and very general. You know, we're working with the Pelletier family to make sure that what's best for Justina is being done. Well, if you look at pictures of this girl, what's best for Justina is obviously not being done, because there are pictures of her a year ago before all of this happened ice skating. Apparently she was a very accomplished ice skater, and now she's in a wheelchair. She's in a lot of pain. And like I said, she's not getting the treatments that she needs. And when I first saw this, and I think a lot of people do, people with children probably even more so than me, what happened in the United States of America that parents are not allowed to raise their children as they see fit and give them the medical attention that they see fit to give them. That a whole other set of doctors in a hospital can swoop in and steal custody of your child from you. In 2014 in the United States of America, how does that happen? I'm sure that the Pelletiers have been asking themselves that same question for a year now. And like I said, I wish I knew the name of this group, Christian Defense Coalition, I believe it is. Here it is. That the state was trying to have Justina put in foster care, and as of last week, that move was halted by the Christian Defense Coalition. So, good for them for doing that. Really quickly, on another kind of sad note here, we lost Harold Ramis early last week. for those of you who don't remember, Harold Ramis was in Stripes. He was in Ghostbusters. He was Egon Spengler in Ghostbusters, and was a writer of such other great movies as Animal House. And he's really going to be missed. So on a little personal fun note here, let's do this.
Coming in.
Hey, this is a loading zone. You can't park here.
We're not parking it. We're abandoning it.
I can't believe we're doing this. Listen, if I get killed, my blood is on your hand.
Just don't get it on my shoe, okay?
No?
I'm not saying that the Army will be able to do for you what it did for me. All I'm saying is that you get out of it exactly what you put into it. Now, sometimes the Army's your best shot.
Now, there's a couple of questions that I have to ask you. They're a little personal. Have you ever been convicted of a felony or a misdemeanor? That's robbery, rape, car theft, that sort of thing.
Convicted?
Yeah.
No.
Never convicted.
That's good. Good. Are either of you homosexuals?
You mean like flaming or?
Well, it's a standard question we have to ask.
No, we're not homosexual, but we are willing to learn.
Yeah, would they send us someplace special?
Guess that's no on both. All right, now, if you'll just give Uncle Sam your autograph, yeah?
Sammy, get well soon.
It's good. Now your name.
Harold Ramis was 69, and he died on Monday from complications related to autoimmune inflammatory vasculitis, a condition that he has battled for the last 4 years. And so our prayers go out to the Ramis family, his wife, and his daughter, I believe. That is it for me tonight. Sorry for the throat frogs. I will be back next week. We will talk more, I'm sure, about Ukraine and Russia. Please look for me at facebook.com/Becky Noble, Twitter at Patriot Witch, Examiner.com, News Ninja 2012, and I want to thank everybody for being here with me tonight, for chilling out. Stay safe, and I will see you next time.